Okay, Mr. Brunel.
May I please report? The trial court erred in denying Officer Casanova's qualified immunity in the face of audio and visual evidence coming from Officer Casanova's body-worn camera that, and others, that clearly showed that a sudden and aggressive movement, both in language and in body movement, by a possible suspect of a violent assault that had just occurred minutes before.
Well, I watched that video and it doesn't clearly show anything to me. So maybe you better be pretty precise about what it shows. It's only how many seconds long anyway? Not very long.
Right, the incident.
At least inside the house, it's very short.
Less than five seconds that this actually occurs. But the trial court focused on whether there was a material fact issue as to whether the appellee Snowden, quote, brandished a weapon, while recognizing that he did have an object in his right hand at his waistband when he suddenly rose to confront Officer Casanova at the front door. We believe that that is not the standard in this circuit. In fact, in this court in Salazar versus Limon, a case which is dated in 2016 and therefore clearly established law in this circuit, held that an officer that's confronting a suspect that makes a sudden movement towards a police officer, leading the police officer to reasonably believe that the suspect is about to reach for a weapon, is enough for the officer to use deadly force in response to that occurrence, even though a weapon is not.
What is it that would have indicated that he was about to reach for a weapon?
When he suddenly rose from the couch, Your Honor, he raises his right hand to his waistband, and he clearly is in the grasp of an object that the trial court even identifies as a shiny object. Officer Casanova, seconds after he retreated to the street, after the incident occurred, immediately told his fellow officers that he saw a gun. And within 2 minutes thereafter, he called the dispatcher and reported that he saw a 9mm.
Oh, counsel,
well, I thought the record indicated that Casanova acknowledged that Snowden never pointed a gun in his direction. And also, Casanova testified that when Casanova began firing, Snowden was no longer walking toward him. Are those accurate representations from the record?
I believe that in the split second, changing circumstances, that what actually happened is that when Mr. Snowden suddenly rises and uses aggressive language and uses body movements to reach for an object at his waistband, he begins to move towards Officer Casanova, saying, "Who the fuck is this?" And then he starts to move to his right in an attempt to flee to the rear of the house. And when that occurs, Officer Casanova tells him, "Show me your fucking hands," pardon the language. Mr. Snowden does not stop or comply with the directive and keeps moving towards the rear of the house.
Okay, well, when I ask you the question, the first part I referred to is, I'll say it again, Casanova acknowledges that Snowden never pointed a gun in his direction. My question is this: is that an accurate representation of the record? Whatever else the record shows, is that an accurate representation of what Casanova said?
I believe that the video does not show that there is a weapon pointed at the officer. However, in Salazar Limon versus City of Houston,
you're just not going to answer my question.
No, I believe that's an accurate representation, Judge.
It is an accurate representation. All right.
Yes. Yes. But Salazar Limon specifically says at 826 F3rd at page 280, we have never required officers to wait until a defendant turns towards them with a weapon in hand before applying deadly force to ensure their safety. And that's citing Manis versus Lawson, which I'll speak about in a minute as well.
Counsel, let me make sure. I'd kind of like to get you to cover the Graham factors, and I assume you probably are going to do that, at least some of the more important ones. But this is at 1:20 in the morning, And as I understand it from the record and from the video, that the officer does not identify himself as law enforcement or police officer, anything like that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And he's also shining a light into, a bright light into the premises. Is that correct?
He does have a flashlight in his possession, shining. When he reaches the front door, it's shining at an angle, as you can see on Officer Casanova's body.
How do you respond to, I think some of the deposition testimony was that the light itself, especially in that darkness, was blinding. How would the occupants know that it's an officer from the police department as opposed to an intruder at that hour of the night?
I think there were earlier events during that evening that indicated that these people in the house knew that the officers were present. They saw...
Is that in the record, though? You're saying there were earlier events, and I don't... Maybe I missed it, but I don't recall in the briefs a history of events prior to the young man getting punched in the face by a perpetrator that the officer believes now may be in the house. What are the earlier events, and where can we find those in the record?
Yes, I believe that Officer Casanova, when he's speaking to the lady whose husband was punched in the face, discloses that he was there earlier and that he had seen two individuals, a lady in pink pants, and her, who was delivering soup at the house right across the street from 217 Roberts, where this incident occurred. I believe it's in the police investigation and Casanova's affidavit, Your Honor, where he said that he had been at that house and shined the spotlight on the house before the incident totally occurred.
Well, you said aggressive language. Other than the vulgarity, which unfortunately is all too commonplace, how is that statement an aggressive language towards someone who he may or may not know as a police officer?
Right. That's a good question, because I think his body-worn camera shows a sequence of events where he is approaching the front door and he knocks on the door, and when it swings open, he's greeted in a very calm fashion by Mr. Snowden, who tells him what's up. And that calm demeanor is consistent with his knock-and-talk investigation, which is just to go and talk to people in the house at that point. And Officer Casanova immediately responds, "What's up, man?" You know, in a very casual, conversational tone.
But that assumes that they know that he's a police officer, as opposed to somebody who's at the door entering the house for whatever purpose.
That's right. And
he doesn't announce. His uniform is black or very dark, is that correct, the officer's uniform? But he doesn't announce law enforcement or police department or police officer, "What's up?" He just shines the light in and says, "What's up?"
And there's no clearly established law that requires him in a knock-and-talk investigation. That does not implicate the Fourth Amendment restrictions, because it's neither a search nor a seizure. It's just talking to people that he identify himself as a police officer in that process. But I think what his body cam clearly shows is when a door opens, there is a ceiling light in the living room that is bright, and it casts light on him standing at the door 6 feet away from the occupants. And the light is so bright that his shadow is cast behind him on the porch. And so from a reasonable officer standpoint, he knows he's dressed in uniform. His beanie has the SAPD logo that's reflective. He has a shiny badge, name tag. He's got his gun belt. He as a reasonable officer, is entitled to believe that his presence there is going to be known by these people because the light is shining brightly on him at the front door. And he's engaging in casual conversation with Mr. Snowden at first. And it wasn't until a split second that Mr. Snowden suddenly becomes aggressive in his language, and he pops up from the sitting position while grasping an object in his waistband. And there simply is no clearly established law that an officer has to wait until a suspect pulls a weapon before he can respond to defend himself.
Well, let's just then get back to the question I asked you earlier at some length. The second part of that question was regarding whether the record reflects that Casanova testified that when he began firing, Snowden was no longer walking toward him and had begun turning toward the rear of the house such that Casanova shot at Snowden from the side. Is that an accurate representation of what we'll find in the record?
Yes, sir. In accordance with Wilson versus City of Bastrop, an officer in a situation where a suspect is fleeing the scene is still entitled to use deadly force if the officer reasonably believes that there is a danger to other people from that suspect using a weapon. And what happened when Mr. Snowden begins to move to his right to go to the rear of the house, he's clutching this object in his waistband, and Officer Casanova knows, and Officer Panna's body-worn camera video shows that Panna is behind him, and there's a third officer, Officer Garza, who's also in the front yard in the near vicinity, so that in the case that Snowden is actually in possession of a gun and about to shoot, those people are also in danger. So we believe the case of Tucker versus City of Shreveport is clearly applicable in this case because it is.
You say Tucker?
Tucker versus City of Shreveport. Yes, sir. 998, 5th, 3rd, 165, a case from this court in 2021, which shows the proper analysis of Fourth Amendment excessive force claim where video evidence is present. And it establishes also in the summary judgment context in qualified immunity that the plaintiff has the burden to point out clearly established law, which has not happened in our case. Tucker involved the trial court denying qualified immunity based on video evidence. It saw from the plaintiff's perspective that he was putting his hands behind his back to submit to arrest. However, this Fifth Circuit panel actually disagreed with it amongst itself. There was a 2-to-1 disagreement in what the video showed. But the two members of the panel said, from the reasonable officer's standpoint, the video did show that the arrestee had engaged in a flinch that was construed by the officer as resisting arrest. And it also disagreed with the trial court and reversed the denial of qualified immunity. This case recognizes that the use of force is an area of the law in which the results depend very much on the facts of each case, and thus police officers are entitled to qualified immunity unless existing precedent squarely governs the specific facts at issue. Another case similar to Tucker is Buehler versus Deere, again involving video evidence. This is reported at 27F4-969 from last year, where various angles of video evidence show the incident, and the plaintiff was a so-called police accountability activist, and that he was videotaping Austin police officers as they confronted citizens on 6th Street. And the plaintiff claimed that he was complying with the officer's instructions to stand back and turn around and submit to arrest. But the trial court agreed with the plaintiff from his standpoint, but the Fifth Circuit reversed the trial court, holding that from the reasonable officer's point of view, the officer was entitled to believe that Tucker, by throwing his camera to someone to preserve his evidence, was interpreted as resisting arrest because it was evading the officer's attempt to place him under arrest. And I think that's what these cases stand for, Your Honor, is that when the court views the video evidence from a reasonable officer's standpoint, I think the court will see that Officer Casanova does not have to wait till a weapon is pointed at him, ready to shoot him dead, that he can use reasonable efforts to defend himself when a suspect is reaching for an object.
Normally, when we decide that the video is dispositive, it's because the video contradicts any other kind of deposition testimony or any other assertions, and that it's unequivocal. But here you have all these other statements about what happened, and the 5-second video has to be overwhelmingly conclusive for us to be able to utilize it at the appellate level, as opposed to letting a fact finder decide any disputed facts.
I understand, Your Honor. What we're saying is the trial court misassessed the materiality of the fact dispute in that regard by saying brandishing a weapon is not clearly shown on the video. It has to be more than that. But we think because of clearly established law in Manis versus Lawson and Salazar-Limon versus City of Houston, and then more, which predated this incident, by the way, and then more recently, Batchikova versus Doge, where the courts have held that officers are entitled to use deadly arrest because a suspect makes a sudden movement to indicate to the officer that the suspect is about to retrieve a weapon, even though no weapon is ultimately found.
All right, thank you. You've saved some time for rebuttal, Mr. Brunell.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Mr. Spaulding.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Obviously, part of this court's role in this case is limited, and the defendant on appeal of an interlocutory denial of a summary judgment is required to be prepared to concede the best view of the facts to the plaintiff. And they have clearly have refused to do so in this case. There are fact issues all over this case, as the district court recognized. This court has acknowledged today that the video that Officer Casanova can hang his argument on is, in fact, not clear at all. And part of the problem comes from, Officer Casanova took a very specific position when this incident happened. And in his affidavit, he is very clear that he saw a 9mm handgun in his hand at the time, and that he responded to him drawing that handgun. That's nowhere shown on any of the video evidence in this case. And so, Judge, you're right. The video evidence is not of the level that you have in Scott versus Harris, where it clearly disputes one version of the events versus another.
Tell us about the how you deal with the assertion of a shiny object.
Well, there was some acknowledgement by the district court at the hearing that he thought there could be something there. There could not be something there. And this was based on some enhanced still frames of the video of Mr. Snowden when he stands up. I can't see anything. I don't see anything in the video when it's run at full speed, certainly, of the body cam. There is evidence in this record that that Mr. Snowden had a cell phone, but he had it in his pocket. He was wearing khaki pants that had zippered pockets. So there were zippers on these pants, but there's no indication one way or the other whether, any of this indicated the shiny object existed, first of all, on the video, and if it did exist, what exactly it was, and whether...
I mean, you would acknowledge... I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off.
No, that's good.
You would acknowledge that in an appropriate case, an officer could misunderstand that thinking it's a weapon, but it's some other shiny object that the officer might be able to respond
I think some of those cases where somebody makes a move and the officer believes it to be a weapon, then that can justify the use of deadly force. But one of the issues in this case is just the speed at which this happens. I mean, this is 5 seconds. And Officer Casanova is taking the position today that there was an immediate aggressive move on the part of Mr. Snowden when Officer Casanova opened this door unannounced. And I think the video reflects that all Mr. Snowden does is get up off the couch when he's addressed by whoever's at the door.
Well, does it show that he reached for his belt or his pocket at the same time that he was getting up?
No, it doesn't show that he reached for anything. If anything, it shows he's sitting in a seated position with his hands down on his lap, and when he gets up, those hands remain in that same position, and they don't move. they don't move on the video. And he takes a step towards the door, at which point Officer Casanova immediately draws his weapon. And he draws his weapon and starts firing in conjunction with giving orders to Mr. Snowden to show him his hands. In fact, the testimony is that Mr. Snowden, nobody in the house ever heard Officer Casanova announce, "Show me your hands." All they heard were gunshots. So getting to the Graham factors, you've got no evidence of, you know, and as the district court recognized, the first Graham factor is the severity of the crime. They're there to investigate a misdemeanor assault. There was no issue. There was never any allegation that there was a weapon. It was unclear where this assailant was. And in fact, the Officer Casanova's actions themselves are consistent with this not being a very serious crime, because he's going up and attempting to conduct a knock and talk. Then you get to whether there was an immediate threat. And there was never an immediate threat to Officer Casanova. What I'm hearing here today is that, the justification for firing the shots is because he was worried about others, because he believed that he had a gun in his hand, but he's moving away. He's clearly moving away from Officer Casanova. In fact, he's, when Snowden is shot, he's shot in the right and left buttocks. So he's clearly faced away from Officer Casanova. And then finally, you have whether there was any resistance. And there was never, first of all, there was never any command given to him that he even would have had the opportunity to resist. So, the district court took a very careful view of the evidence in this case, and it took a very careful review of the video.
Did he say, "Show me your hands"?
Officer Casanova did say, "Show me your hands."
Well, that would be a command.
Well, true, but it has to be a command that you actually are able to respond to. He says, "Show me your hands," as he's firing his weapon. I mean, it is that quick. So, and of course, there's testimony in this case that they never heard a command. So there was never an opportunity to respond. Even if he had said it, the timing is such that he would have never had an opportunity to comply with it. And even that, even the failure to comply with that command doesn't in and of itself justify the use of deadly force.
So with regard to the clearly established prong, what case do you think we should look at?
I would look at Baker versus the one we cited in our brief, Baker versus, I can never remember the, Putnell, Baker versus Putnell. And I think you could also look at Poole versus City of Shreveport, which is the case we referenced at the district court hearing. I mean, because both of those deal with the sort of movements that Officer Casanova is kind of relying on or seems to fall back to, given what seems to be an implied concession that he did not have a gun, he did not have a weapon in his hand, and in fact that there wasn't a weapon in his hand. So I think those two cases demonstrate the clearly established law in this case. And, briefly, one thing I wanted to address just very briefly outside of the excessive force qualified immunity context is this argument that Charles Roundtree and Taylor Singleton were not the targets of his use of force. Everybody in this house was a target of this use of force. He wasn't there to get Snowden. He was there to Officer Casanova was there to investigate the assault. Snowden didn't match the description that was given to Officer Casanova. The only description given to him was that the man had a gray sweater, blue jeans, and he had no hair. And when he shows up, he's wearing khaki pants, a black hoodie, and he's got hair, and he's wearing glasses. Officer Casanova testified that when he got to the door, he saw everybody in that living room. He knew that Mr. Snowden was there, he knew that Ms. Singleton was there, and he knew that Mr. Roundtree was there. And so the fact that he may not have intended to seize Roundtree or Singleton doesn't change the fact that he still had he was still willful in his use of force on those, and so that his conduct is still attributable to everyone that's in that living room, and gives them all claims for excessive force. This is not like the case that Officer Casanova relies on, where you have a training officer who mistakenly shoots another trainer because he thinks that his gun has blanks in it.
Counsel, am I correct that my understanding is that the district court didn't get into the Roundtree and Singleton claims separately?
It did not. It did not address those separately. It addressed. I mean, it obviously granted denied the summary judgment on all of those, but it addressed the injury, the elements of the excessive force claim with respect to all three of those. So I think the district court believed that there was they each had their own Fourth Amendment claims, but it didn't specifically address that particular issue. So ultimately, you've got fact issues. They're required to accept the plaintiff's version of those fact issues. The district court did that. This court should do the same, and this court should affirm the denial and send us back for trial. And unless the court has any further questions, I'll get back the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Spaulding. Mr. Bernal for rebuttal.
Going to the Graham factors quickly, first, the severity of the crime. The trial court identified the misdemeanor assault. I'm not sure that's true. Casanova's body cam video shows serious bodily injury to Esteban, Maria's husband, sitting in the car. That would elevate it to a felony. But I think the real crime at issue here is when Snowden stands up reaching for an object in his waistband that the officer sees as a 9mm gun, and that's a felony aggravated assault case against a public servant. In fact, he was tried for felon in possession.
You and Mr. Spaulding are in disagreement about whether the evidence says that he reached for his waistband. So where does that come from?
Where does it come from? I think the video evidence clearly shows that he raises his hand to his waist and he is grasping an object. Even the trial court recognizes that fact, Your Honor. So I think it goes to the video evidence.
The timer's not running.
The second Graham factor is whether the suspect posed a danger to the officer or others. And I think this is the most compelling factor that weighs in Officer Casanova's favor, because he perceived that Snowden was reaching for an object that he saw as a 9mm weapon. That is overwhelming consideration alone that justified Officer Casanova using a defensive reaction. Indeed, if he didn't react, he ran the risk of himself being seriously harmed, as well as his fellow officers. The third Graham factor is whether the suspect complied or fled the scene, and the video clearly shows that Officer Casanova, as soon as Snowden rises and reaches toward his waistband, he tells him, "Show me your hands." He's not shooting at the same time. He says, "Show me your effing hands," clearly on the audio portion of his body-worn camera. And then he fires two rapid succession rounds, because Snowden does not stop. He does not raise his hands. He continues to retreat to the back of the house. The clearly established law the appellees are referencing, Baker versus Putnell and Poole versus City of Shreveport.
And he was shot through the buttocks and he turned. The fatal shot hit him where?
The fatal shot, as Snowden is moving to his right, he crosses in front of Ms. Singleton and then Mr. Rountree. The second shot lands in Mr. Rountree's chest, and that's the fatal shot.
The shot that killed him was directly in his chest.
That's correct. And it's obvious that Mr. Casanova's intended target is Snowden. The other two, Singleton and Rountree, on his body-worn camera video, do not make any threatening language, recitations, or bodily movements indicate that they are threatening the officer at the front door. Baker and Putnam versus Hoover City of Shreveport involve factual situations where the suspect poses no threat to the officer. In fact, the trial court also cited Tennessee versus Gardner, which is the same proposition. A suspect fleeing the officer that poses no threat to the officer does not justify the officer using deadly force in response. Baker versus Putnell is not a video evidence case. It relies on the typical summary judgment standards on evaluating a material fact dispute, and eyewitnesses submitted a testimony that the suspect was not a threat to the officer and in fact did not even see the officer when the officer discharged his weapon. And the court recites even that the four gunshot wounds to the suspect, the location of those wounds indicated that the suspect was not facing the officer at the time of the shooting. I think that this court in recently, before I get there, I think that I'd like to point to this court to evidence that is very material in this case. It's just found in the record at beginning at page 2155. It's exhibit D2. Penn is a body-worn camera, and it is presented in individual screens. So you can go through his video rapidly, or you can stop on any selected screen. And the screens at issue here are 938 through 1105 in the record. And what those screens show is that when Officer Casanova approaches the front door, his weapon is holstered, and it remains holstered until Snowden stands up and becomes a threat to him. It also shows the lights showing on him. It shows Panna behind him. It shows Officer Garza also in the front yard to indicate that he could also protect his fellow officers in the event Snowden began to shoot his weapon. This court in Felice versus Surratt recently stated that the issue of qualified immunity, let me read the quote. Foundational to our qualified immunity doctrine is the concept that we must view an officer's actions from that officer's point of view without the benefit of hindsight. From the comfort of a courtroom or chambers, it is often possible for a judge to muse on how an officer could have handled the situation better, but that does not mean the officer is not entitled to qualified immunity. In this case, we cannot say that the officer violated clearly established law when we view the events from the officer's point of view at the very moment that they acted. Close quote. I think that's what our case is about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bernal. Your case and all of today's cases are under submission.